Well, thank you, Pastor, for letting me use your pulpit tonight and be able to share with you. I notice you put a cavern between me and everyone, so I can't go bother them personally. me and your pastor did meet, like you said, a few years back and got to hang out in Wisconsin where it's substantially colder than here. Even when he came at that time in the fall, there were jackets and you could see your breath most of the time. So that's where I'm from, actually. I grew up there. I actually grew up in the town we met in, where Pastor Thompson is at. And God called us, my family, into missions when I was in college. And I never wanted to be a missionary. Okay? I'm not one of those people that was like, the Lord told me when I was five. I was like, I told the Lord when I was five. Never doing that. And if you ever want to see God do something in your life, just tell him that you won't. You know, I mean, ask any of your wives. They all married you after they said they wouldn't. My wife actually said that. She's like, I'll never marry you. And I was like, well, 20 years later, you're stuck. But ministry's like that, isn't it? Doesn't God like to pull us out of our comfort zones? And I'm going to touch on that today because the title of my message today is Faith Stories. And I'm going to talk about our ministry and how it really is a practice in faith. Truthfully, I can't say that I planned any of this. Every plan I made fell apart and everything God wanted worked. So through that, I've learned to just do what God asks. And it sounds easy, but it's not. Because we're humans, right? You go, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this. And God's like, no, you're not. You're going to do what I ask you to, and you're going to like it. And it's true, you are going to like it. I don't even mean that to be funny. You will like it. It's a lot better that way. And what I've just learned to say is, yes. You see, too often in our lives, we try to plan and we say no first instead of yes first. In fact, at one of the conferences that me and Pastor Matt were at, there was a man who came up to me at the further north, Shell Lake. And he walked up to me and he goes, oh, you're in Malta. And I said, yeah. And he goes, that's a little island over by Sicily. And I said, yeah, you seem to know what you're talking about. And he goes, did you ever do ministry on ships? I was like, nope. He goes, you want to? And I said, sure. Who would have thought I would meet some guy that actually knew where the country was, first off, and then had a contact there where we could actually minister on ships, which is something that the evangelical church has been praying for the last 20 years. So this guy got me in touch with somebody in Northern Europe, and we started talking, and we started texting, and now it turned into FaceTimes, and then I met by their board, and then I signed agreements with their board, and a year later, we're actually, in 2 months, going to be doing training and going on our first cruise ship and doing chapel for the entire ship. Why? Because we said yes. I didn't realize that it was virtually impossible to do. I just said, okay, God, let's do it. Too often what happens is we say, you know what, God, here's my plan and here's my steps I'm going to take. Instead of just going, okay, God, where do you want me to go? And that's what I want to touch on today. Malta is a country. It's a country that is, they actually call it a city-state. Okay, when you look it up, it's called a city-state. The reason why is because it has 500,000 people in the entire country. Okay, that's like the size of what, your city? Okay, it's 22 miles long and 15 miles wide. That's it. So if you really like to snuggle, come visit me. Because we are really close together. I mean, our houses, when they build them, they share a wall. So like you can hear your neighbor. There's no gap. It's like, hi, how are you? I mean, they're right there. And that's how they build. That's how they live. That's how they act. But it's awesome because I always tell everyone I like it because in our ministry, no one can get away. They're stuck. But God called us there because we were introduced to a church there that was really struggling, an evangelical church that was struggling. Malta is also a country that has 2% evangelical Christian. Only 2% would say that they believe in the concept that Christ died for them and you're saved by grace. 2% of the population. The rest of the population would say that they were Catholic, and therefore you have to do different rituals and things like that in order to be saved. So we try to tell them that, you know, there really isn't anything else you have to do. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, there's nothing else you have to do. That's what I mean. Like, Christ did it on the cross. To the point that during Easter, they will actually carry chains on their feet up and down the streets, paying penance. They will pay to carry statues, hoping that their wife will get pregnant or their child will be healed. They don't understand that the work's already been done. Now, part of that's awesome because they do believe in Jesus. So what's been amazing is that we're able to go, hey, you know that guy that you have on that cross in your classroom and in your office? Yeah, Jesus. Do you know he already paid for all that? He did it all. And it starts amazing conversations that we've been able to do things that we never thought were possible. But the trick is we just don't fight. We don't argue it. We just do what God asks. Point number one of my message today would be just get started. When it comes to faith, just get started. Do something. Try something. Put your faith to the test. And when I think of the concept of faith, I generally think of something I couldn't have done on my own. Do you know that God actually doesn't get upset if you ask him to do something in faith? How many of you know that? He actually says, without faith, it's impossible to please me. So he wants you to dream and believe in things that you couldn't otherwise do. And then go, God, I can't do it. You have to fill in the cracks. He's like, got that. Done. But too often, we live within the confines of our human thinking. If you ever want to live outside the confines of your human thinking, join missions. Join ministry. Just ask your pastor. The number of times that he can probably sit around and go, you know, this happened and then this happened and between the two, I don't get it. Doesn't make any sense. Logically, it made no sense. But God. We have to begin to live that way more and more and more and more, because that's what faith is. Our faith can't be in what we do. That's not faith. That's just intelligence. Faith is beyond intelligence. Faith is things we don't understand. And then holding on to a God who we don't have to understand because we already know he did it. In our ministry, we've also gotten into Catholic schools. Something the evangelical church has never been able to do. And that was actually an amazing story. You guys would think I plan these things. I really don't. I should have my wife here. She's like, he doesn't plan anything. He doesn't plan lunch. I mean, like, what are we going to eat? I don't know. Is there food in the fridge? I mean, like, but I was going for a walk with a friend. And this is how we ended up ministering in 32 Catholic schools that invited us in. You ready? We went for a walk. Okay, let's go for a walk. Okay, so we're walking past, there's this shopping center and grocery store and mall and whatever. So we're just walking along talking. And he runs into this guy and he goes, hey, Julian, how are you doing? He's like, I'm good, how are you? So we start talking and I barely know this guy and I don't know this one at all. And I'm sitting there kind of like, hey, I'm a third wheel. And he goes, Julian actually is an Olympic water polo player for Malta. I said, oh, that's really cool. I said, I can barely swim. That's pretty impressive. And he goes, no, I actually played for the Olympic teams, and now I coach. And I go, okay, so is that what your job is? He goes, well, actually, I'm a psychologist in the Catholic schools. I said, really? So we started talking about schools and what he did and things like that. And I said, you know, I have a question. Have you ever done an assembly in your school? He goes, a what? I said, an assembly where somebody comes in and they talk to your students. He goes, no. I go, well, would you be willing to have one? I go, I've got some friends that do it in America and things, and that'd be really cool if we could. He's like, yeah, let me think about it. Give me some information. So I give him some information on a friend of mine named Eric Tim. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but he's all over the nation, actually all over the globe. He actually travels with the Newsboys, and he does a bunch of different painting stuff, where then he flips it over, and it's a totally different picture and does all that stuff. And way more artistic and intelligent than I am. And so he does these things all over the world. So I called my friend and I said, hey, would you be willing to come to Malta? I think I just got a door open. Would you be willing to do that? I don't know if I can afford you, though. See, that's how faith works. I don't understand how this is going to work, but would you be willing to? And he's like, yeah, sure. How about you give me this amount? And he gave me an amount that normally would cost for a day, for the whole week. He flew over and we did 2 schools a day for 7 days. Literally straight, boom, 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 boom. Since then, they've been begging us to come back. God opened a door. We just walked through. Now we've actually started Dignity Revolution with Bob Lenz in Malta. It's the first country outside of America that we've started an anti-bullying program that actually teaches students how to handle bullying situations. And the entire process never says God, but everything they teach is a godly principle. They're now paying us and asking us to come in and teach their students how to treat every person in their staff and in their school with dignity and how to stand up for the rights of everyone. God opened the door. You see, my story, and I don't want to offend anyone. I did once, and I want you to hear my heart on this. I was born in 1980. And when I was born, they didn't have politically correct terms. I don't know if any of you remember the 80s. But I was born with cystic kidneys and was supposed to die. My dad took me to doctors all over the place and tried to get as much help as he could. And finally, the doctors ran enough tests and they said, your son's going to die. There's nothing we can do. He has cysts on both kidneys and they're so far gone that there's nothing we can do to help him. We're going to give him a shot, which I still have a scar on my left hand, from a child's IV. How many of you have gotten an IV? How many of you have a scar from an IV? I have a scar on the back of my left hand from an IV that the doctors gave me, and they said, Mr. Levy, my dad, we're going to give your son this injection, and we're going to try to help him, but it's only going to work for about 24 hours, and that's all we can do. And then you'll need to take your son home because he's going to die. My dad began to pray. And a week later, they were like, well, I guess he's not dead. In case you're wondering, I make it. It's like watching the attempt. I don't want to kill the story, but I make it. But the doctors, they said, you know, he'll probably live, but he's going to be mentally retarded and a midget. Now, those are the two terms that they used back then. And now we know we use different ones. But that was the terms. And I tell everyone they were half right. So imagine how tall I'd be. You see, from the beginning, my story is one where if it wasn't for God, it wouldn't have happened. So I guess it kind of makes it easier for me. Because all through high school, I was told I'd never graduate. My senior year, I went into the guidance counselor like we all do, and the guy told me I was going to be a janitor. I've now traveled to 32 different countries preaching the gospel. You see, if we follow God and have faith in him, he'll do the rest. Because he really likes taking people that man says never will and doing the impossible. Because in the end, it's not my story. I get to tell his. So what we have to learn to do is just get started. You see, in Matthew 14, 22 through 23, there's a story of 12 boys, really, that just got done feeding 5,000 people. And Jesus looked at him in all of his infinite wisdom and said, get in the boat and go on the other side of the lake and I'll meet you there. Now, I want to challenge you with something. I'm ADDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDDD a story. And I want to challenge you to try that once in a while. Act like you don't know how it ends. and then put yourself in the story. I mean, everyone's like, oh, I'd be like Daniel. No, you wouldn't. When they lower you on that rope, you'd be climbing that thing as fast as you could. You don't know how it ends. But you look at that story, and Jesus is like, I'll meet you on the other side. And none of the disciples were like, how? Right? No one asked. I would have been like, the sea is big. You're staying here. How? And he doesn't answer it. So they get halfway across, and they're scared to death, like most fishermen are. Right? No. Fishermen don't get scared of the water. But this day they did. They were scared to death. They think they're going to capsize, they're going to die. And all of a sudden they look off in the distance and they see this glowing man walking towards them. And in all of Peter's infinite wisdom, he says, Lord, is that you? And I have read this story 100 times and thought to myself, this would be the greatest trick of Satan. Yeah. Lord, is that you? Yes, it's me. Step out of the boat. Take away the work. Just drown. Make it easy. But Peter's like, if it's really you, call me to you. Again, Satan's like, done. I can lie anyways, right? But Peter had enough faith that when he heard his voice, he stepped out of the boat. He stepped out. Now, I promise you that James and John and the others were probably trying to grab his cloak and being like, dude, don't do this. You're an idiot. Stop. You don't know it's him. Right? And you don't add that in, but in reality, if it was us doing that, you know, if I was going to jump off this stage with my hands tied and go face first, you'd be like, don't do it. That's stupid. The Lord told me to. No, he didn't. But Peter had enough faith that he stepped out no matter what. You see, the first step is always the hardest when it comes to faith. Because once you get there, you can't go back anyways. My son knows how to swim now, but he didn't always. They don't come out that way. You have to teach him. Something I screwed up on the first time. Just kidding. He's still alive. But I grew up on a lake, and my son wanted to swim, but he was always scared to go out over his head. And I finally looked at him and said, Latney, if you want to swim, we got to go where it's deep enough where you can't touch. He goes, Dad, I don't want to do that. I said, well, you're not going to learn how to swim because you're going to walk. So one day I picked him up and threw him over my shoulder at about 6 years old, hauled him out to a raft, threw him on it, and jumped off. And I looked back at him and I said, Latney, if you want to learn how to swim, you got to jump in. Well, Dad, I don't want to jump. I said, just stick your toes over the edge. He goes, like this? I go, yeah, but you got to do them both. He's like, no, that's good. I'm good. You see, that's how most of the church lives faith. I'm going to keep one foot where it's safe, and I might stick a toe over the edge. But that's not faith. You see, faith doesn't happen until you jump. Because my son had faith in me. Because that day, after some coaxing and maybe a little nudge, he had to go airborne and believe that I'd catch him no matter what happened. You see, I've grown up in the church my whole life, and I hear people always say, the safest place is in God's arms. The safest place is as close to him as you can get. But here's the thing, too often we're too scared to jump into his arms in the first place. Because you don't get to walk in, you jump in. Many times through trials, many times through struggles, many times through bigger things than you ever wanted to handle. And no matter how big it is, that's when God goes, it's okay, I have you. Because no matter how big we get on earth, we're still his child. Because I can tell you that when my son hit the water, I grabbed on so tight. And he went from completely scared to completely happy and wanting to do it again. And that's what faith is. Because once you learn that God's going to catch you, it gets a whole lot easier to jump the next time, and the next time, and the next time. Because you realize he's never going to miss. He's always going to catch you. The church that we were sent to Malta to start working with when we first got there, we ended up being able to buy them a building, which was almost legally impossible at the time. They're currently still using it to this day. Their church went from 35 people to over 100 in 2 years in a country they didn't think it would grow in. We had to come back because of COVID and things like that. And when we went back to Malta to plant our church, we didn't think it was going to work. We were so scared. I'll be honest. I was scared. Didn't know how I was going to get a visa. Didn't know how a lot of that stuff was going to work. I got off the plane and talked to a friend of ours that's on our board, and I said, you know, we need a building. She goes, I think I have an idea for you. I said, okay. She goes, I've been dancing for 30 years, and I think we should use the dance hall. I said, sounds good to me. She goes, it seats 500 people. It has two bathrooms. It has an elevator. It has a kitchen. Just so you're aware, it costs $500 an hour. I was like, okay. She goes, but maybe you can negotiate with them. I said, I can if you don't. Don't say a word. Let's see what God does. So we began to pray. The next day we walked into the building and I walked through the whole thing and the guy was showing us everything that he had and I'm sitting there going, there's no way I'm going to afford this. Never going to happen. That's humanity, right? You can't afford this. It's never going to happen. And God said, just give him a number. I said, a number? I said, yeah, just give him a number. So I thought, all right. And I'm going to lowball him. So I walked up to him and said, I'll give you $100 a week. $500 an hour. I'll give you $100 a week. And I want to use it Saturday and Sunday. And the landlord goes, okay. I shook his hand so fast and so hard and turned around and walked out of that place. The lady next to me who told me how much it cost, I literally was like, thank you. Let me just keep that closed. There we go. And we got a deal. And I turned on. She looked at me on the way to the car and was like, I cannot believe that just happened. I said, neither can I. But we prayed last night that God would do it. So for the last 2 years, we've been running a church for $100 a week in a building we should never have access to. We started to pray because it got really hot in the summer. We said, God, we need air conditioning. I don't know how we're going to do this. And my wife's motto became, come to church and sweat with us. You think I'm kidding? She actually said it on stage. Come and sweat with us. It was so hot. We were on the top floor of a building with no air conditioning, no air. The sun beat down on the roof. The sun hit the sides. And it would maybe go from like 120 to 110 if you open the windows. It was hot. And all of a sudden, this Eastern European man walks in. And he goes, I like your church. God's here. But I can't come. I said, why? He goes, it's too hot. I'll come back in the winter. I said, okay. He came back the next week. And I walked up and I said, is it winter? He goes, no. But I like your church. And he kept doing that for a few weeks and finally, he walked up to me and he goes, Pastor, can I ask you a question? And I don't want to be offensive. I said, okay, ask. He goes, my wife and I have been blessed. We've run businesses our whole lives. And I really like your church. I go, yeah. He goes, but it's hot. I said, we've already established that for the last 3 weeks. He goes, one of the businesses I own is in air conditioning. Would it be okay if I installed them? I said, yeah. Go right ahead. I said, how much is that going to cost me? He's like, nothing. How about I just give it to you? You see, when you walk in faith, God does the rest. I found out just recently that that man is also an ordained minister with a different organization in Eastern Europe, and he's now filling in while I'm here, preaching on Sunday mornings, when we didn't have a staff. Our highest Sunday was 3 weeks ago, and we had 52 people in a church that we didn't even think we were going to be able to start. They're paying all their own bills. They're doing all of that. They're covering everything because God tells us to just take the first step. Point number two, and I'm going to go through these last two quick so you'll go at home on time. Point number two is jump in the deep end. If you're going to have faith, just jump in the deep end anyways. Don't go small. Go big. Do it with everything you have. Everyone looks at me and goes, are you scared for your kids? No. I'm happy for my kids. They get to see God move every day. We don't shield our kids from the reality of ministry. They know the good and the bad. They've seen dad get yelled at. They've seen mom cry. They've seen dad cry. But you know what else they've seen? They've seen God move. They've seen mom and dad cry and pray. And a week later, they've seen God move. And my son can come up to you today and look at you and say, my dad prayed for this. And a month later, it happened. I got a phone call today from my son, and he said, Dad, we had 3 visitors today. I said, that's awesome, buddy. And he goes, and guess what? I go, what? He goes, one was a girl. I said, really? And he goes, I go, how old was she? He's like 14. He's 14, if you're wondering. And I said, was she cute? And he goes, yeah, she wasn't ugly. I said, does God answer prayers? He's like, he really does. You see, because we told our kids to start praying for a youth group. And since they've started praying, kids have been walking through the door. The Bible tells us you have not because you ask not. The problem, guys, is sometimes we're too afraid to ask. Just ask. God already promised he'd give it to you. So jump in with both feet as deep as you can. And say, God, if you don't help me, I'm not going to make it. And he's going to go, I promise I will. Because when the church begins to do that, God begins to move. You see, my final point is this. And I pull the point from Acts 2, 5 through 13. When we have faith, God moves. And God will bring fruit to your life. Scripture tells us that Jesus said that you will know my disciples, A, by their love, but also by their fruit. You'll know them by their fruit. And he points out that there's good fruit and bad fruit. And my challenge to you today is this, is that you are producing fruit. You don't have a choice. That's how humanity was created. The choice you do have is what kind of fruit. What fruit are you producing? If you look back in your life, are you producing a life that people can look at and watch and see that God is doing things behind you that they went, oh my word, it's got to be God because I know that he's not that smart. It's got to be God. Or are they following behind you and going, I don't ever want to be like that person because every person they talk to ends up worse than they were. Because either way, you're producing fruit. We don't talk about that enough. Because if God is in me, if his spirit has transformed me, the fruit that I'm producing is fruit that he would want produced. But I only do that if there's faith. Because in our ministry now, we're watching as God is flourishing. We went from YouTube videos and karaoke that would be interrupted by commercials during worship. So much fun. I was totally non-German at that moment and relaxed. I'm kidding. It was horrible. I was like, that's my son sitting on the sound booth trying to stop the commercial. We went from that to this Sunday having a 4-person worship team. We went from having no children to having 10 to 12 children every week in our Sunday school classes. Went from having no youth group to now having a really cute one, apparently. You see, if you trust God, he'll do the rest. Because God has begun to open doors, not just in Malta, but across the world for us. In a month, we're actually being invited to South Africa with a church that's running about 400 or 500 that wants to join our network. I'm meeting with their staff and their leadership, and they're wanting us to help them train pastors and plant churches in South Africa. And what we continue to say is, yeah, why not? Don't say no. I know there's structures, I know there's boards, I know there's leadership. Just don't say no. Say, yeah, we'll pray about it. Say, yes, we'll seek God. Because don't ever say no until after you prayed. Too often we say no and then pray. Say yes and then pray. And go, God, I'm willing, but I don't know how. I'm willing, but I don't get it. I'm willing, but I don't have the money. I'm willing, but I don't have the staff. I'm willing, but I don't even have a building. Because you're going to look back 3 years later and have a building, a staff, and the money. If you say yes to God. Because our ministry just keeps growing. And it's funny because it's not growing because we're doing some massive campaign. We run Facebook ads. That's what we do. Every other month, we run an ad with me in it. Where I tell people we have a church that meets at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning and we'd love to see them there and I'll give you a free coffee. Because Jesus loves you. Because our prayer in planting this church was that we would be a place where people can meet Jesus. And a place where those who have been hurt by the church would be healed. Because there's so much hurt. Christ tells us, come to me, all who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. So we take that motto and we say, just come. And we began to pray in people that had been hurt. Guys, that's a hard assignment. We had a lady who walked into our church and she had messaged me on Facebook and said, am I allowed to come? And I said, absolutely, you're allowed to come. She goes, how much does it cost for me to come? I said, nothing. So a few weeks later, she built up the courage to come and she walked up the stairs and walked in the door. She was holding a Bible. I walked up to her and I said, well, hello. Thanks for coming. We're glad you're here. She goes, is it okay that I'm here? I said, yeah. She goes, I have to tell you something, though. And I said, you can if you want, but you don't have to. She goes, I'm divorced. And every other church I've gone to tells me I'm not allowed to come. I said, well, you know what? At this one, you can come anytime you want. And at that moment, she began to sob. That lady has invited about 15 people to our church because she gets to walk up to them and say, I found a place where you don't have to be good enough. You don't have to be perfect. Because I stand on stage every Sunday and say, guess what? I'm the worst one in the room. And if I'm allowed to stand up here, then you're allowed to sit down there. Because we love you where you are. And one of the first sermons I preached was the story of the woman at the well. Because the thing I love about that story was Jesus knew her sin, but he didn't use it against her. He used it to show his love. And instead of walking away in shame, even though he knew everything, she walked away boldly proclaiming, I have met the Son of God. And I know it because he told me everything I've done wrong. And he gave me a chance anyways. Guys, that's our ministry in a nutshell. In a country with less than 2% Christian that understands grace, I know a Jesus that accepts you right where you are, but is big enough and bold enough not to leave you there. Because he paid the price for you to be totally and completely pure and holy in his sight because he loves you. And too often people look at me and go, man, I wish I could be a missionary like you. I don't like that statement because you can. The difference between me and you is you don't need a budget to do it. You just have to walk out the building. And if the entire church learned that, Pastor Matt, you wouldn't have a big enough building. If we just told the world about a Jesus that doesn't judge them, but instead about a Jesus that took the entire cost of our sin and paid it for us, that's what missions is. But it takes faith to step out when it doesn't make sense. And that's all we ever do. As God continues to open doors on ships and in Africa and in schools and in youth groups. My family and I, this is just the truth, are looking for about another $20,000 in cash because living on an island isn't cheap, especially in Europe. We need about $2,000 more in monthly support. So if you could at least do me a favor and grab one of those cards. My whole family's in the picture, and they're much better looking than I am. So please grab a card, because all you got stuck with tonight was me. But pray for us. Pray that my wife can handle all three of us, her three kids. Pray that our budget comes in, and pray that God keeps opening doors. And that we have the strength and energy to just keep saying yes. I thank you for your time. And before I go, if I could pray for your church, is that okay? Lord, I pray for each and every person in this room. That tonight would be a night that when they walk out the door, they would know that each and every one of them is called. Called to do exactly what you put them on the earth to do. And that if they will walk in faith, they will see every promise that you've promised them. And I pray, God, that because of this church, this entire community would change in ways that we never thought, hoped, or imagined. In Jesus' name, amen.